Welcome to American Reds, Tribal Rant's unofficial podcast for the FX series, The Americans. I'm Michelle.
And I am unofficially Mike.
And tonight we get to podcast The Americans, Season 4, Episode 4, Chloramphenicol.
Oh boy.
And of course we know why it had that title.
Yes, that was an easy one to figure out. Yeah, but it was, you know, kind of driven home. The point was driven home during the show.
About the antibiotic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's, I mean, pretty much what
It saved everybody.
It's pretty much what the whole thing was all about,
yeah.
With the chloramphenicol.
Chloramphenicol. I couldn't say that for like half the day, and I just learned how to say it recently.
Did you?
Yeah, I've been practicing for the podcast.
Have you?
Yeah, chloramphenicol, okay. Chloramphenicol, chloramphenicol.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But you want to hear it in Russian?
Sure.
Well, I can't do it.
Well,
in Russian.
Then, okay.
I was going to Google it for you.
Were you? Okay, no, it's probably not worth that. So, did you have any overall thoughts on the episode, or did you want to just get right into the scene by scene? Do you have anything? I don't really have anything to begin with. It was so content heavy.
I thought it was another great one. I thought it was, there's some really, really deep stuff in here that really, really pertinent information. I mean, the whole thing, it's like every scene, there's just this, like, zero filler and no dead time. It's just...
I've always said that about this show, particularly. I think they don't do a lot of filler in a lot of the things that we watch, but definitely, in something like this, it's like every little thing matters, even if it doesn't have significance to it, necessarily. No, there's nothing about it that... I mean, everything is like... of the time and stuff too. Have you noticed, like, even down to the clocks on the wall are very reminiscent.
The set arrangers and coordinators do a fantastic job.
Absolutely. 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 Wouldn't they be called the art?
Uh-oh, somebody's giving something away.
Did you do that too?
I wonder if you have more information about Mrs.
Davies
than I do.
Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah,
I can't wait to do
find
this.
Out.
I'm proud of you. That's so good.
Did you look up the other one, who the forward was by?
I did.
What did you come up with?
I'm not telling you.
We'll have
you.
To get there then.
Okay.
Well, that's exciting. Yes, it is.
If y'all can't tell, see, we kind of, even though we do this together, it's almost like a competition. It's not, because he's so much better than me.
Oh, yeah.
But
okay.
We try to find little hidden things in it and talk about the hidden parts that might not be so obvious. And we really struggle. This hasn't even been out for, what, not even 24 hours. It's been out like 21 hours. We don't listen to any other podcasts before we put it up, but... we also like to get it up early because we're kind of really chomping at the bit to discuss a lot of the things, and we don't even discuss it with each other. And we want it very authentic as well, our interaction back and forth with it. I think that's important.
Yeah, just one final note before we get into it. Michelle forbids me from discussing it with her before we get in our cave to do the podcast. Like, for instance, we're not allowed to talk about it and discuss things so that our reactions can be, you know,
authentic.
First run. You hear them first. So if I sound like an idiot and I have gotten something wrong, you'll hear it here first, because I won't have had time to run my thoughts by Michelle concerning this television show.
Not that I would know anyway. Not that I would...
whatever.
No. Okay, well, let's just go ahead and dive into it. Do you want to?
Yeah, chloramphenicol. When was it discovered?
I don't have a lot on
chloramphenicol. Well, thank goodness
I'm guessing the 1940s would be my guess.
I hate you. 1947. And it was useful for treating a lot of bacterial infections, meningitis, plague, cholera, and typhoid. It was... original use was for typhoid. Were you aware of that?
I think I did read
this
something
was the
about
original
it, yeah.
Use for chloramphenicol.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we know that it's a pretty strong antibiotic, and I think there's a couple of things that we could... I don't want to read too much into it, but it's like you said before, it's so heavy with nuances of stuff that I can't help when I see something, you know, I think of something else, and we'll get to it, and you can absolutely tell me if I'm just grasping, trying to, you know, pull this other stuff in. But
okay, well, I mean, I don't know. You may be just advanced, so.
Or not. Okay, we start off with that scene where Elizabeth is at the payphone with William.
Yeah, she tells him to go across the street. He'll have a better view of what?
She wants to talk to Paige privately. I think she's afraid that this is going to be the last time she gets to talk to Paige.
So she's just telling him to get away.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I took it, that she just wanted him to walk away and give her a little bit of privacy. She didn't care so much about the conversation.
She wasn't talking to Paige first. She was talking to the handler or the...
Right, didn't mind him being there for that.
Right, and I thought that was great. You know, she was doing everything except abort the murders.
Oh, I know.
Abort the murders. The eagle flies low over the mountain.
Yeah.
The eagle... The chicken is in the coop. The chicken is in the coop.
saying... she was like very adamant about it.
Don't kill him. Kill him this weekend.
Think about it, though, because here she is stuck. Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, this is they should have called this episode, instead of chloramphenicol, they should have called it the incredibly bad timing episode.
I mean, really?
The convergence of events that are the worst possible timing you could possibly imagine episode.
For a lot of reasons. Not just for the fact that if Pastor Tim and Alice had been killed, Paige would have known that they weren't there, and that Paige couldn't have been like their alibi, so to speak, for them. But she also is sick, or she thinks she's sick, and her mother just died. So she's got all of that emotional stuff on her too. So she's got her mother's death leaving her. She's afraid that she's going to be really sick and maybe leave Paige and Henry. I mean, this is a kind of horrifying situation.
Yeah, it's a horror story for sure. They're dealing with a lot. And poor old William. This guy is as awkward as they come. He's standing there beside her with that look on his face. And I want to say it's a stupid look, but we know William is not stupid. He's not a stupid person. He's a highly intelligent person. But he's just got this awkward, social awkwardness about him. He is such a geeky, nerdy, I mean, just, he's the geekiest, nerdiest secret spy agent.
He plays it perfectly. He plays it perfectly, but you have to stop and think about how literally smart these people have to be. These scientists have to be. I mean, they really are. They're like so smart.
Just these looks that he gives her, you know, go over there. You got a better view from over there. And he's just got this look like, what are you trying to tell me?
Yeah, but that's perfect, because you use the term socially awkward. That's exactly what I was going to say. He's brilliant, but very socially awkward, even to the point. But we see that in more instances than one here. We see a lot of social awkwardness in this, and even Adderholt talks about being socially awkward in a little bit. There's a lot of different stuff like that, but. But you're right. Paige is really tore up. Paige, all of a sudden her parents are gone, and she's afraid that Pastor Tim and Alice have told somebody.
Did something that caused their absence. Or,
right.
Yeah.
Or told somebody, and so they're in trouble and running or whatever.
Yeah, she's really kind of unhinged, unstable. I mean, who knows what she's going to do? I'm sure that's going through Elizabeth's head, too. I mean, oh, my God, what's this kid going to do now?
Well, and I think Elizabeth feels how bad she feels. I mean, I think she really senses how badly Paige feels over this and the whole situation that it's created now.
Her and Philip, though, in this episode are just in full-blown damage control mode. First, they're trying to call off the hit on Tim and Alice, and then they're trying to hope that everybody lives through the, you know, this what is it, 24, 36 hour period, whatever.
Yeah, you wouldn't
know for 36. They are sequestered. They can't go anywhere, and they can't go to their children. If there's even a crisis, they can't go for fear of spreading this pathogen.
Oh, yeah.
To the child. They can't go
anywhere. No matter what, if somebody broke their leg or whatever,
no matter what
stuck.
Happens, they are stuck,
they are.
And you know that that's killing them.
And seeing this, it was kind of funny. It was kind of like, it wasn't lighthearted, but it was kind of funny to see her say, go stand over there, the view's better, and all this kind of stuff. But then, once she got off the phone and she tried to reassure Paige that it had nothing to do with her and it was just work and everything's okay, but she's feeling bad. Paige is like crying, like sobbing, crying, and she has to get off the phone and leave her 15, 16-year-old Bichetti off the phone. And then the reality of how bad this was is brought back. Because William comes up, he takes some snips and cuts the whole handset of the phone away because she's had her mouth up against it.
I know.
And then it was just like, that just kind of like hit me. Okay, this is serious.
Whatever we touch is going in the can. He's doing a fantastic job cleaning up, by the way.
You know how much I love him.
I mean, he's coming up behind everybody, and I mean,
he's got his little dust buster out, like cleaning.
Yeah, he's
No, but he's wiping it down. He cuts the mouthpiece off and puts it in a bag.
But what's more, he's prepared to
him.
Cut the mouthpiece off. He's got his little spy snips with him to do this. I mean,
but
it's not
that
like
just really, like, threw it back in my face, what we're talking about here. This is serious. This is serious, like, spread a plague.
Now, we go to the intro from this, right?
Yes.
I was watching the intro, and what's your favorite part of that intro? Just
I don't know. You fast-forward it every time. I don't get a chance to look at it very much.
Excuse me, we can air our dirty laundry on our time.
Okay. Anyway, my favorite part... I don't know if the guy danced.
Yes, 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 yes.
Isn't that great?
That's my favorite part, too. And you know what that dance is called?
Tell me.
It's called a hopak. I think I'm saying it right. H-O-P-A-K. It's a hopak. It's also called the gopak or the Cossack dance, I think. It's a Ukrainian dance, and it's often referred to as the national dance of Ukraine. Joseph Stalin once forced future Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev. Remember Kennedy?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Kennedy years and the Cuban Missile Crisis? Khrushchev was the Soviet premier at that time.
Only in history books. I'm not that old, but
oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, anyways, yeah. Joseph Stalin forced one time Nikita Khrushchev to do this dance. Nikita Khrushchev was the Communist Party chief in the Ukraine when the Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. It's called the Hopak. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. And it doesn't look like it'd be a real easy dance.
No. The men are required to do that squatty stuff, yeah. And remember, I had a lawyer friend, Fred, and he used to, like, you know, he would, like, river dance or try to do his variation of the Hopak, and it was kind of funny.
Yeah, it wasn't nearly as good as the guy on the upcoming episode.
So we come back, we go to Gabriel, and he's in bad shape.
Yeah, Gabriel looks sick, doesn't he?
Gabriel does not look like he's going to make it. And William, in addition to being socially awkward, is a bit of a smartass in this scene with Philip.
He's a smartass the whole time. You're not remembering. Every scene we've seen him in, he was a smartass about, I hope you weren't able to get the codes to...
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he goes beyond that. He says, well, what should we do? What do we do? He goes, well, if we believed in God, we'd pray.
Right.
And he says, you trying to be funny?
Oh, I know. Yeah, and he goes, yeah, this old man who's not in the best shape of his life has been exposed to a deadly pathogen, and he should be in the hospital with IVs, and we should all be in the hospital with IVs. But, yeah, this is really a funny
situation.
Yeah, I think
it's hilarious. Yeah, I think it's hilarious is what he said.
Yeah, but he is going around, we were talking about him just a minute ago, William is, and he is being as sanitary.
His little dust broom and his whisk and his plastic gloves. He keeps taking off and changing his plastic gloves, and he's got his little biohazard bag, his little makeshift biohazard bag.
Oh, that's not makeshift.
And
that's a real
biohazard. Oh, is it? And he's running.
Yeah,
he's,
looks like.
He's putting stuff in it. I mean, he's gathering stuff up around everybody.
Plus, he's giving, like, great advice. People don't understand how important this advice is when you're out and stuff like that. I mean, just like in general, to prevent things like catching colds as often and stuff like that.
Here we go. Here we go.
No, I'm serious. It's important. You don't touch your nose. You don't touch your eyes. You don't touch your mouth. You don't handle your face when you're out if you've handled other things. You catch colds so much more if you do that kind of stuff. And he's telling them, you know, if you touch each other, you know, don't. But if you have to touch each other, have gloves on. Don't.
Well, wherever did you learn this, Michelle? You sound like you may have had some training.
Maybe. A long, long time ago. And he's also telling them, put paper towels in the biohazard bags. Put the gloves that you're using in the biohazard bags. And he's holding up the little red bags.
A long, long time ago, like Star Wars, long, long time ago?
In a galaxy.
Far, far, far away. Okay.
I did make a note here that I should have went into infection control.
Yeah, you definitely should.
I really should.
Went into infection control, yeah.
Can you imagine, seriously, if I worked in a hospital and I was able to somehow make everyone implement my protocol for infection control?
They'd get tired of this and they'd find you in a biohazard bag somewhere.
But I just love that stuff. I love sterile fields and, anyway.
I'm not important. I'm aware. I'm painfully aware.
But Philip asked about Elizabeth talking to Paige, and she tells him, that she was upset and tells him about that she's afraid it was her fault and about Pastor Tim and all that.
Yeah, and that really upsets Philip.
Yeah, Philip was seemingly upset pretty much his whole time, but with good reason. Good grief. I mean, he's like...
He's stuck, too.
He's stuck. I don't know if you know this or not, and I've meant to tell you 100 times, and every time I think to tell you, we're not podcasting. So I'm actually thinking to tell you while we're podcasting.
This is fantastic.
Did you know that Elizabeth's having his baby?
You mean, I'm sorry?
In real life.
Okay, in real life, her name's not Elizabeth.
In real life, her name is... Carrie Russell.
And
she's having Matthew Rice's baby.
Really?
Yes. Yep. They're a thing.
Wow.
I know.
Maybe that's why their chemistry's so good.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Isn't that
crazy?
That's really neat.
Yeah. I mean, I've known it for a long time. She's actually, I think, pregnant where they're filming here because they're, like, keeping it... she would probably, be almost showing she's so little, it'd be easy to show.
She's teeny tiny.
But they're not showing a lot of those little teeny tiny pictures of her anymore, like the... stuff, so I don't know. I don't know if she's actually showing yet or not, but she's pretty, I don't know how far along I think that's interesting.
That's interesting, yeah.
Okay, then we go to Oleg talking to his dad.
Is he in Russia?
He's in Russia. He went to Russia, we presume, right, because his brother just got killed. So he went home for that.
Right.
And he's asking after his mother, who's not getting out of the bed.
No, she's in heavy depression mode.
Mm-hmm. But... now, this whole conversation...
he's appealing for Nina's release. Well, actually, not for her release directly right here, but just for his dad's help with Nina and her situation.
Yeah, this is where his dad says, are you upset with me or whatever? And he said, well, you didn't help her. And he's like, I don't even know where she is or what happened or anything. And his father says, well, she didn't die because I would have heard. And this is where you see Oleg, he goes to his father and he really, pleads with him. He's like, please.
Yeah, he asks please in Russian.
And
please.
He needs to find out what happened to her, he says. And he's like, really, pleading about this. And his father doesn't like it at all. You can tell he does not like this at all.
Yeah, he's annoyed by the whole thing. And we find out later why.
Right, right. Okay, then we come up with Henry going to Stan's house for the milk. Now, what do you think that...
I think Henry really has developed a bond with Stan. He's really... he really loves Stan. And did you notice Stan's voice? It was Stan's voice on the intro this episode. Last week on The Americans, that was Stan's voice.
Mm-mm.
When they were covering the previous scenes. Yeah, just a note there. He goes over, he needs some milk. Henry goes over and he needs some milk, and they get in that conversation, and he asks what Stan said to Sandra.
Right, about their first meeting and stuff like that, about how he met her.
And he went into great detail about the moment they met, and then he just did hyperspeed through their life. And then what happened? Well, then we got married, had Matthew, and got divorced.
Yeah, I mean... but you could see, we've seen this a lot now, but this might be where I'm stretching a little bit. You'll have to tell me, but we saw Philip, not this past episode, I don't think, but the one before that, or maybe even the one before, but where he was laying in bed and he was remembering his childhood, remember where he killed that other child?
Right.
So he was doing this, thinking about about the past. We see Elizabeth do this upcoming in this episode a little bit. But we also see Stan do that here. And when Stan's talking about when he met Sandra, I mean, his voice changed and he got like this look on his face. And he too was like almost like transported back into that time.
Yeah, he was reliving that moment.
Right. It's like the past has this really dramatic effect on these people. Because just like you just said, when he came back to the present, he's like, you know, he just went over, what, 20 years, 15 years of life in 3 seconds. But Sandra bumping into him and causing a drink to be spilled on him and how mad he was and how beautiful she was and how he'd never seen it. And he goes on and on and on and how she was laughing.
Great detail.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I don't know about you, but I pictured that scene in my mind.
Yeah, yeah, so. Me too. And then it was all downhill from there.
Yeah, the drink spilling was the highlight, I guess, huh?
And then he asked Henry something interesting. He goes, do you ever talk with your dad about this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I'm wondering if Stan... Okay, Henry went over there because they're out of milk. Now, if you're out of milk in your house and you're, what, Henry's 12 or so, right? Your mom goes and gets the milk. I mean, your mom, or your dad, I guess. It's the 80s and, you know, early 80s. And your mom goes to the store and picks up the milk. Do you think Stan's fishing a little bit? I mean, not about that, because Henry came over and said, we have no milk. We're out of milk.
I think he's just, I don't know if he's in full FBI mode here. I think he's maybe just genuinely curious. Hey, do you ever talk to your dad?
You know, talk to your dad, but I think he also wondered why they would be out of milk. And then his parents are out of town, and he's like, where'd they go? You know, so I think he's not FBI mode, I agree, but I think he's curious about what's going on over there.
Yeah, what's happening next door.
Right.
Because, you know, he has been out of touch with Philip now for a couple of days.
Right. And Henry also points out that they were supposed to go to Epcot, but his parents had to cancel that because of business or whatever. And so Henry's really given him quite a little bit of information just in general conversation. He also says that he asked Stan if Stan knows how to work a computer.
Right.
So we haven't heard much about that computer that the center gave to Paige and Henry, but
which was a totally innocuous gift.
Right. Just filler. No.
Just gave him a gift.
But this is where, see, Stan gives us a little tiny piece of information. Remember how it ended last time when Sandra came over and was talking to Philip and Philip was kind of lobbying for Stan, you know, Stan doesn't have his family or whatever. And this is where Stan goes, well, Matthew's going to be coming over a lot more now, and he'll be coming over several days a week. And so that goes to show, that showed me that Philip's conversation with Sandra meant something. And she decided
that's a good point.
It was a way to pull that into that, too. And by the way, Matthew knows a lot about computers, and he'll be happy to help you. So then Stan comes over in the kitchen with Paige, and she thinks it's Henry, and she hollers at him, hurry up, you're going to be late for the bus, and all that.
And I think he's a little more in FBI mode when he walks through that door, because he's looking around, and he just appeared more in FBI mode.
What was the point of him doing that? Why wouldn't Henry just come in and say, hey, Mr. Beeman's going to give me a ride to school. I ate Cocoa Puffs over there. What was the point of Stan coming in and Henry sitting in the car? Because I wouldn't have thought Henry would have taken his school books or backpack or lunch or whatever he carries with him over to Stan's to borrow milk anyway.
That's another good point. Yeah.
So it was just kind of funny to me that Stan came in. I mean, I guess I could see if Stan and Henry came in, but there was something kind of odd to me about just Stan coming in. But Paige doesn't like it. Can you tell how?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, she goes into practicing her skills mode, and she's doing a pretty good job here of stonewalling Mr. Beeman.
And let me tell you, if they had been working some plan to make Paige more an operative, I don't know how they could have done anything to put her in a situation where she literally, now her guilt is so heavy, and she feels like she has no choice. She has to protect her family, and they keep showing that on, you know, on the last episode. They keep showing us where Elizabeth's telling her, I expect you to put this family first. That's what I expected, you know? And
you're right.
So then we go back to William, and he's checking Gabriel's vital signs. And this is where Elizabeth asked Philip if Est ever talked about death. Now, what was that?
She's got it on her mind. She's really doing a lot of heavy reflecting here. And this is just the beginning of it.
It is, and she is. But the fact that she's connecting it with Est, I mean,
well,
do you think
Est
that...
is her only organizational get in touch with your feelings experience that she never even probably noticed that something like that existed until her husband got interested in it. And since it had such a noticeable effect to her, or on him, to her, then she's wanting to know, because she's sitting there wondering, not knowing as much as they deal in death.
Not having ever really thought about the ramifications.
Well, she has with her mom, I mean, when she was
but
a kid.
Just now, though.
But now it's her, and she's feeling that, you know, I may never see my kids again. You know, I may die. I may die here. I may never get out of here. And this may be it for me. And so I think she's actually genuinely wanting a little feedback, real honest to goodness feedback from Philip. She's not mocking.
No, I don't think she's mocking at all. But is she, you know, we've talked about it a couple times. She's definitely softening. We're definitely seeing a more turn. And she could turn back at any second, but definitely more turn to family, I think.
I don't know that she's going to come back from this transformation that we're watching her go through.
Well, this is where she shares with Philip that when her mother died, Gabriel said that they had people with her, that she wasn't alone, and that she wanted her to know that she loved her, that her mother sent her love to her and wanted her to know that she loved her right before she died. And then she said, do you think Paige knows we love her?
Right.
So it's pretty deep talk for anybody, but this is monstrously deep talk
and
for somebody like Elizabeth.
Philip's aware of what's going on inside her, too.
Well, yeah, but did you see his face when she said, do you think Paige knows that we love her?
Of course.
He was like... You know, just, I think the question took him aback from Elizabeth.
From Elizabeth, because these kind of things he thinks about all the time. But these kind of things she and he do not talk about all the time.
Right. But now she's also got Pastor Tim on her mind. And so nobody's said a word about Pastor Tim at this point. They're talking about death and her mom and her relationship with her daughter. And
she comes out, by the way, you know he's
got
to go.
Right, we got no choice.
Right.
Because she's feeling so guilty. She's feeling so guilty. She feels like I might leave my daughter and if I'm going to have to do something that's going to hurt her so bad anyway or have something done.
I think it's safe to say that she's genuinely worried. She's genuinely worried for her family.
Yeah.
What's going to happen as a result of this experience.
Both about the physical well-being, if something happens to them, but also she's showing more and more interest in the emotional well-being, which just seems like...
She's getting in touch with her feminine side, just like Philip got in touch with his feminine side at Est.
But it seems like, you know, like before, she's really been more focused on... mission, just very mission oriented, and
exactly
I could hear her be like suck it up, you know, if anybody had like an emotional problem with something.
Right, yeah, even mocking that she's so mission oriented. You hit the nail on the head. That woman is more mission oriented than any body I was ever in the military with.
So then we go to Adderholt asking Martha out.
Making his move.
He did.
You know what, Martha? I've always enjoyed talking to you.
He's pretty smooth.
I don't think so.
Oh, I thought he did great. I would have never. As a matter of fact, the whole time that he was having this conversation with her and everything else that went on, I was still shocked when Stan was going through her apartment. And you knew it. You knew it last week. But this was nothing but a setup. The whole thing was a setup.
Well,
because he went to Stan and told Stan, we're going out, I'll have her here. If something happens that she doesn't show up, I'll let you know. You know he did all this. If she has to leave early, I'm going to let you know. This was set
still
up.
Still, though, with Stan, searching the apartment is the primary idea here. And with Anderholt, going out to dinner with Martha, because he's not going along with this idea that Martha's got anything to do with anything bad. And he's just kind of humoring Stan.
Right.
And so going out to dinner, this is an excuse, this apartment searching episode. Going out to dinner is...
You think?
Yeah, secondary to Stan, but it's primary to Adderholt.
Well, not even secondary to Stan. Stan couldn't care, but to Adderholt, he does care. He cares about going out to dinner.
Did I say Adderholt again?
You always say Adderholt.
I always say Adderholt.
But I do too, so it's okay.
Adderholt. It's interesting too, you know, in the 80s, at least around here, interracial relationships were still not that common a thing.
Right.
And they're kind of approaching it like it's fairly common. And maybe it was, you know, in Virginia and the D.C. area at the time. But here, it wasn't a really common thing, I think.
Yeah, I don't know, though. Was he asking her out, like, on a date kind of thing?
Yes, he was.
Well, I wasn't sure. Either way, I completely agree with you. I mean, in the 80s, it was definitely not as...
Not as widespread,
accepted,
not as common.
Right, as it is now. In the South, like you said, in the South, it wasn't. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how it was anywhere else either. But I didn't really get that. I felt like more than a date that he just wanted to get to know her. But I felt like he's been wanting to get to know her. I would call it almost like a pre-date or something. I don't know. I'm a girl. I can look at it that way if I want to.
No. Adderholt has something on his mind other than...
don't know that. I don't know.
Are you kidding me?
No, listen, though. No, I don't know that.
Come on.
I didn't like how he asked her out. I don't like that. Just FYI. I don't know if you noticed it or not, but it was a way that she almost could not say no.
Well,
I hate this.
That's a skill.
It feels really strong-arming to me, and I hate that.
He's an FBI agent.
I hate that. Somebody goes, it doesn't just have to be somebody asking you out. It can be anybody asking you for anything. You know, somebody can say, what are you doing tomorrow? And you go, oh, I don't have any plans. And they go, oh, can you babysit? Oh, well, you know, I mean, at that point, what are you going to say? No, I have something I have to do. You know, you can't do that. So that's what he did to her. It doesn't have to be a date.
I guess
he's
so.
Like,
what
are you doing
point.
Tonight? And she's like, oh, I'm going to go home and watch TV. I have no plans.
Have
I'm going
to
watch TV.
And go to
have
bed.
Wine. You know, right. So he knew there was no, I mean, she couldn't say anything after that.
She couldn't say, I've got something else to do.
Right. I mean, she couldn't say anything. She could have just said, no, thank you. But, you know, that's kind of rude, maybe. And I don't know.
Well, she handled it pretty well. She didn't...
I know, she didn't flinch when he asked her out. She sat there and she thought about it, and then she said, sure. And then she smiled, and I mean, I would... You know, I could just imagine her horror, because here she is. She's going into this office every day, right? And you know she's sitting in this office, and she's thinking... Who's looking at me? Who's thinking something? I have to watch everything I say and do, right? She's definitely feeling like that. And then this has to feel like almost an extension of that. Like, you know, when she goes out with him or if it were anybody in the office, it would be an extension of I have to be real careful about everything and, you know, just kind of like keep that guard up the whole time. So
yeah, because she is now a willing participant in what's going on.
In an excellent one, as we'll find out in just a little while. But we go back to William, and he's shooting them all up with antibiotics again. And this is where Philip and Elizabeth are worried about Henry's biology.
Minor details. They're sitting there. She's got nothing but time on her hands, and she's just sitting there thinking. And she's going over these minor, trivial details, and just. I mean, she's behaving as somebody who thinks she's going to die. This is what happens when people, when they have these experiences where they have these bad accidents on the highway and stuff. People start asking about minor details about their, you know, make sure and tell my wife this, or make sure
Really?
Yeah, this is what people do.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever realized that. I thought they were just like kind of...
No, they don't say profound things. They say it's the little things they think about, just the little
wow.
nuances when they're actually considering, you know, what did I not take care of? What did I not do?
The key to the cabinet is on top of the...
Yeah, exactly. And it's none of this, you know, I went skydiving. None of that stuff. It's all minor details.
Well, this is where we find out that Elizabeth's a little nauseous, she says. She's not wanting to eat. But this makes William pretty upset because he's not sure if she's coming down with it. He does say that it could be the antibiotic or glanders, essentially. Okay, and then we go to Martha, and Martha's calling Clark.
This is a bad time to be calling Clark.
And leaving messages.
Bad, bad time. Can you imagine? I mean, the worst possible time.
Well, she's not calling him. She's calling that apartment that he keeps.
Yeah, but did you notice she looked at the telephone when she realized?
What was that?
She thought it was bugged.
She heard something, right?
She thought it was bugged.
I know, but now she said, I'm sorry to keep leaving you messages. So she left him other messages. But she heard something. She heard something on the phone, I think.
We all heard something at the end of the conversation. It was like a disconnect at the end or something, if you'll remember. But, you know, she's thinking the phone may be tapped. She's trying her best to communicate the importance of a return call here. It's very important. You got a real small window, and she's trying to communicate that without, you know, giving herself away. And I don't think she's doing a great job. If anybody were listening, and I was thinking, oh, this is going to be a disaster when she goes to dinner with Adderholt. It's going to be a disaster.
Right.
She's not going to be able to keep it together because she can't even keep it together on this telephone call trying to get a hold of Clark.
And she's already knocking back wine.
She's
already got the wine.
She doesn't know what to do. She's desperate.
So then we see Elizabeth vomiting. Okay, I promise you, if anybody's ever listening to this that makes these decisions, I love everything about this show, but we do not have to show people, like, literally over a toilet with stuff coming out of their mouth.
This goes back to your I don't like to see people get tortured thing. This is your
thing.
That
was The Walking Dead.
This is your thing.
You like to see vomit? Is that your thing?
I don't like to see vomit. I don't like to see people get tortured. And I don't like to see people vomit while they get tortured. But it's part of the television show.
Can we not see them, like, from the back? Do we actually have to see, like, what they had for lunch coming out? I mean, I don't want to see that ever in my lifetime. I don't want to see that. And it never fails when we're watching that, I'm eating.
I was getting physically ill myself, not because of watching the vomit, but just seeing her seemingly get sick. I felt like I was punched in the gut.
Yeah, she looked rough.
She looked rough, and she was throwing up, and I thought, oh, my God. You know, they're going to get this thing. How are they? This is really bad. And I thought, maybe it's just a reaction to the antibiotic, which it turned out being. But
and that's what Philip comes in and says again. He doesn't believe it at this point. He's getting really worried about her. But he goes, it could still just be a reaction.
It could still just be. That doesn't really instill a sense of confidence. He didn't say, hey, look, this is probably just the antibiotic. Don't worry about it. He goes, hey, look, it's an outside chance here that this is an outside chance that you're really not getting sick, that it may be just be the antibiotic.
Yeah, well, this is where she tells him that if something happens to her.
She's still on mission. She's still on mission. If something happens to her, here's what you do.
Okay, I don't think that was mission. I think this was family mission.
It was family, but her attitude was not one of panic. She was able to think about what to do next.
Yeah, but what she was doing was so... I mean, she was like, throw me under the bus.
Put spin on it. It's for the mission. This was for the mission because she's still planning on... She's still talking about Tim and Alice.
I know.
So she is still has the mission in her mind, even though all this other stuff's going on around her. And I agree that... That this is an emotional thing about family. However, this is also about getting the mission done. And this is going to be even better. Now you can blame it on me if I die, and you can foo foo it away. And of course, Philip, he's not having any of that.
Well, see, I mean, I didn't take it like that. I took it as Tim and Alice have to go because if Tim and Alice don't go, then they're going to take Philip away from the kids too, whether she dies or whatever. So I took it as she was saying, if I die, blame me to Paige. Have them killed. Paige will hate me, but she'll love you, and Henry never has to know. I took it as just a protect our family. I don't think she gives a crap
about the mission. And you can live here as Americans.
As Americans. I don't think she cares, which is what you always wanted to do.
I know. She's always known that, but now she's come out and acknowledged it.
Right. I just think that she really, the family is what's important. And she doesn't want to see Paige hurt, but she wants to make sure that Philip's protected. I think out of the two, she's the stronger, you know, as far as what they're doing. And she is the stronger. She's the more mission-oriented.
I bet Philip can do more bench press than she can.
Probably. Yeah. He did pull that tooth of hers that time, too. So, you know, he's
But who's the strong one there?
Well, that's pretty strong to be able to do something. I mean, both of them. That's pretty strong of him to be able to do it, too.
She's the strong one for being able to.
But I think
you know why I keep saying Anderholt, by the way? Because that's what I keep writing down.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's a good reason. Okay, then we go to commercial, and we come back, and maybe one of my favorite scenes in TV ever.
I'm telling you.
Ever.
It was fantastic. It was so perfect.
Perfect.
It was perfect.
Everything about this was perfect. And I just have one question, and that is, Martha, where have you been? Because I have never met this girl. I've never met this Martha.
No.
And she was...
She was confident. She was convincing. She was cool.
I believed for a minute that she was seeing a married man. I mean, I did. I believe when she actually kind of is. And she doesn't know, which is another interesting thing. But it was so perfectly executed. She's sitting there.
She totally disarmed Adderholt with this.
She disarmed me. I mean, you know, she disarmed us all. But yeah, she did. She's being the Martha we know at the beginning. He's talking and kind of, you know, spilling his insecurities about how when he's at a party. So
she's
insecure.
Not even paying attention.
She's not even listening. She's looking around. She's nervous. She's fidgeting. She's
taking sips
of wine.
You think she's working on what she's about to tell him?
I don't know. Was she? I mean, because I don't know. Because if that's her workup,
I think she was
she
just
needs to start
so
it earlier.
Uninterested in any small talk with Adderholt.
Yeah, I don't
she just
think
wanted
it,
to get
I
to
think
it.
She was scared. And I think that at that point she still hadn't even decided what she was going to say or how she was going to say it. We're flashing back and forth in this whole scene to Martha and Adderholt having dinner and Stan breaking into her apartment.
Yes, with his little red flashlight. Do you know why they use that red light?
Is it because it's harder to see from the outside
or
something?
Yes, it's real hard to notice.
And Dorothy Moore's Misty Blue is playing in the background. So, but Misty Blue, I mean, come on. That song is like, it's as, I don't know if it's romantic, but it's certainly, it's a song about not being able to move on from someone. When everyone else thinks you have, and you lie to people that you have, but you haven't. And inside, all you can think about is them.
Well, she's made up this story, and she's owning it.
Right. And it's a good story.
This is the perfect fit, perfect song. Let's move on now. Stan finds the gun and the sex book, and he's in the underwear drawer. And was that a condom that he found also? He, you know, the gun was the thing that, you know, that shouldn't have been a big deal. I mean, you know, she's a single female living in an apartment. What's the big deal? She's got a gun. And, you know, he kind of looked at it and gave.
I think he was just surprised by what
maybe,
he was finding about
Martha. You're right. But
because
now,
she seems so demure. I can't say that word. Well, she just goes into this whole story about, I mean, suddenly, new Martha comes on.
She's got a totally detailed, believable story, and she delivers it flawlessly.
She stares him in the eye, and she does perfect pauses. There's nothing contrived, nothing fast, nothing, I'm not nervous telling you this. I mean, it was so believable. She tells him that, you know, hey, you did ask me if I was seeing someone. He's like, oh, you don't have to answer that. And she's like, no, but I'm going to. And it's a married man. And did you see his face?
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, yeah. And she's like, I'm not ashamed. And then she just goes on with the whole, this is just how it is. He's not going to leave his wife. I'm not waiting for him to leave his wife. It's the most real adult relationship I might have ever had
she
in my life.
Telling the truth about that, the most honest relationship she's ever had. And she was telling the truth about that. Didn't she say something about wigs?
She did. She
made a wig reference.
Well, he said, don't you dislike the sneaking around or something like that? And she said, well, it's not like I'm wearing wigs and going to a hotel room.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's hitting all around on things that have happened.
That's right.
And Adderholt is, they're really kind of talking about the situation.
Kind of.
But he doesn't know they're talking about the situation. She's talking about the situation with him not knowing that they're discussing the situation. Him being married is a metaphor for, I think, his situation with his whatever agency he's working with.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, because she does not know he's married.
No.
But she didn't know anything, and she knows she doesn't know anything.
In a marriage, if you're dating a married man, the other woman always comes first, and Philip's job with whatever agency that Martha doesn't really know about, just knows it's, you know, opposing to the FBI, that comes first. So he's kind of, in that sense, married to his mission.
Right.
And I think Martha's making reference to that. And then when Adderholt says, you know, sneaking around, she says,
she brings up the things that he's actually done.
Yeah, and then she's just, and then I think at that point she's having a little fun with it.
She almost is, right? And she's like, in the middle of making these statements, she's stopping and having a bite of food and even commenting a little bit on how good the food is.
Yeah, she's really comfortable in her skin right here.
Yeah.
Real
and
comfortable.
And if she's not,
and
she
has
total
excellent ownership. She is totally invested now. She sat there and told the truth about how she felt about her relationship with Clark/Philip.
Well, and I guess that's why it was so easy maybe for her to lie like that, because so much truth was in it that she could say it very believably.
But man,
right?
She just did she just...
It was just perfect.
Blew him away.
Okay, now let's get back to Stan in the apartment.
With his little red light in the apartment, looking at the gun, looking at the comms, and he pulls out a book.
And it was that book that they have used before, she and Clark.
That's right. But this time we noticed some little minor detail about the book.
Yes, we did.
And what was it, Michelle?
Well,
the author's name? Could it be the author's name?
It was the author's name and the foreword.
And the foreword's name.
Name.
So, Michelle, what did you find out about the author's name?
Well, it was authored by Bianca Sue, S-I-U, right, Davies.
Mm-hmm.
And the foreword was written by an F.M. Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I tried to look up Bianca Sue Davies, like sexual psychology and all this kind of stuff, and I couldn't find anything. But there was an IMDb page.
Where I went.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
And of course, I went to Wikipedia, where all universal knowledge is contained.
I try not to go to Wikipedia if I can avoid it.
Well, do you know Bianca's birthday? Because I do.
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
I think. I didn't write it down, though. Anyway, go ahead.
She's 28 years old.
Yeah, she's close to our daughter's age.
And she's a pretty accomplished art department coordinator, you know, art director and production assistant in several different Hollywood television shows and movies.
Well, she's a Hong Kong native.
She is a Hong Kong native. She's also a set designer.
Right. But she has worked, starting in season 2, at least. I couldn't find it before season 2, but she is she's the art department coordinator for our favorite television show, The Americans.
And one of our favorite movies, Saint Vincent. She worked on Saint Vincent.
Oh, I didn't see that.
You didn't
one.
Notice that?
No.
Oh yeah. She worked on Saint Vincent. She worked on Robot and Frank. I think Gabriel was in that.
Really?
Robot. I think he was.
And she's some so show young,
called,
though.
I know. And some show called 666 Park Avenue. We might need to check that out because for geeks like us, this is an excellent way to make us look up other people's work.
There you go.
I mean, that was such a cool little nod to her.
It was
her
a nice little tribute to her.
Because he had to dig in this darkened Hollywood set that he's filming on and pull this book out and just give us a glimpse just for
you
a moment.
You had to pause it. I mean, literally.
Just for a minute.
It was literally like one or two frames.
So the set directors, and did you notice in the credits, did you watch the credits?
No, I did not.
She wasn't there.
Really?
She wasn't. She didn't have anything to do with this episode unless I missed it. I looked and I watched it twice and I tried to find her name in the credits of this episode and on this particular episode. She wasn't there. Did you see her Facebook page? I went to her Facebook
page. I didn't.
Yeah.
But do they...
I think she's going to friend me real soon.
Do they list the art department coordinator on the credits?
They
did. You notice that?
They
really?
Did. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. From what I remember reading, it was season 2 and season 3 that she was the art department coordinator. But anyway, you're right. It's a neat little tribute to her. Maybe she left the beginning of season 4 or found something else or who knows what. But I thought that was pretty cute. Okay, now the other one I wasn't sure about, the F.M. Simmons. Were you?
No.
Okay, well, you can go into this one.
All I could find was a North Carolina senator back in the
right
1800s. What significance does that have?
It was, let me tell you.
Tell
did
me.
You not find it?
No,
you
I didn't.
You really didn't?
No, I got
okay,
I got.
Okay, well, I'm so excited then.
I got
then.
Upset. Okay.
Okay. F.M. Simmons, the only one I could find, was Fernfold McLendell Simmons.
His parents hated him.
He attended what is now Duke University. It wasn't back then, it was called something else. He was first a member of the House of Representatives from 1887 to 1889, then a senator from 1901 to 1931.
Wow.
In North Carolina. Okay, all that. I promise there is something that ties in, maybe,
we'll
to
get
me.
To it.
I am. He was an unsuccessful contender for the 1920 Democratic Party nomination for president. So, big guy. As the leader of the state Democratic Party, Simmons led the 1898 to 1900 white supremacy campaigns that effectively disenfranchised black voters for a half century.
Really?
And
so he was a racist.
He was a white supremacist, I mean, is what it said. And he was a prohibitionist. Now, all this was going on while she was having dinner
with a black man
drinking wine.
You have stolen the pebbles from my hand, Grasshopper.
I thought that was so
that
interesting.
Okay, I give up. And from now on, from this point forward, Michelle's going to do these podcasts by herself. She does not need me.
No, but I couldn't find anything. I mean, I really had to dig and dig and dig, and I was thinking, okay,
that's
what he was known for.
Interesting.
That's what he was known for.
Prohibition and being a racist.
Right.
So she's drinking with a black guy at a restaurant.
Right.
So
and they put that as the foreword written by on this
the book. That
are these
is,
people brilliant?
Okay, you got to get
what?
This out.
I finally typed in what was he really known for? You know, the thing that he was known for, because it was, I mean, you know, that white supremacy.
That is,
thing.
I'm just, well, you know, if I had more time and I didn't have to work, I'd probably be able to find it and stuff.
I know you would have. I know you would have.
It was just, I was just moments away, but I had other things present.
But how cool.
That's a cool.
How
well,
smart
how cool
are
is
they?
It for you to find this? Okay,
no, I'm just talking about, the writers of this show.
Oh, I know. Well, how I don't want to gush too much.
But I want to gush.
These people are incredible. I mean, to take this level of detail, I mean, it's a book in the bottom of a drawer that the FBI agent is looking through her apartment and just spends
in the dark,
and spends a couple of moments on, and they put that in there.
And I'm just stopping and thinking, what all have we missed? That's all I can think now.
I know. This is why I took 7 pages of notes while I watched this.
Okay. Anyway, I thought.
Yeah. Good job.
I
fantastic.
Mean, seriously.
Fantastic job. Anything you guys do, we're gonna watch it.
I'm in awe. No kidding.
We're fans.
Huge. huge fans.
Probably number one fans.
Maybe number one.
Number one and two right here, baby.
Fan, the Polaroids he took when he went in there, what was that for? Was that to put things back because he's looking at the Polaroids and he's making sure everything's...
Later to go study them, to study the items. They're going to make a detailed analysis of the items that they're going to study these photographs.
So he's going to like do one of those boards on her,
they're
going
to try to attach meaning to these items. When they have more time.
Okay, well, it showed him at the end looking at a photo and looking at the cover, like on her couch, and he went and straightened it back to the photo, too. And I didn't know if that's reason he did that.
That may be the primary reason. I thought that they were going to take the photos and go through them and just try to make some kind of connection between the items in her apartment and anything suspicious.
Well, I just want to say one more thing on this whole scene with this beautiful, perfect music playing in the background. Because, again, I'm going to say the same thing again. I want to repeat myself and say this was maybe the best scene in television I have ever seen, ever. I thought it was brilliantly put together. I've just... You know, everything about Martha, the whole thing about Stan, the flash back and forth, which normally I'm not as much of a fan of, but all the details of it and everything. And I made a note that this is where we saw Martha become an operative.
I agree. She's been dancing around it for a while.
She's done things.
But,
she's
fully invested here.
Yeah, this
she
is
has
it.
Fully invested herself.
Yeah. Okay, so then we go back to Gabriel, William, Elizabeth. And they're all asleep as Phillip's reading, and this is where Elizabeth is having the dream.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about that dream?
Yeah, she flashes back. She's caring for her sick mom. I wrote she's more than likely thinking about Paige. And then as soon as she woke up, she laid there on the bed just for a few moments staring off into space, and she jumped up and said, "I got to call Paige."
Right.
And Phillip said, "Hey, look, you're just going to scare her to death."
Right.
"There's no reason to call. It's the middle of the night."
Right.
"You can't call her."
But, right. It was real reminiscent, like we talked about before, though. Remember when Phillip was in bed and he had his flashback of his trauma in childhood and he got up to go warn Martha about Jean being dead. And he got up like in the middle of the night and he had to go do something right then. And we're seeing the same kind of thing mirrored.
She was with, in her flashback, she was with the most important person in her life,
right,
is what occurred to her. And the most important person in her life, I mean, so many parallels, was sick. And she wanted to give Paige the same comfort that her mother gave her.
Well, I think that she was thinking, okay, I'm sick. My mother was really sick. I don't think she was thinking. I think she was almost kind of dreaming or even hallucinating or something. I didn't really feel like it was just a thought. But she went back to how she felt seeing her mother that sick and was afraid that her mother was going to die. And then she pictured her daughter, like you said, in that role.
Yeah, if she died without her.
Right. What do you think her mother had? Was it probably TB?
She was coughing up blood.
Yeah.
I don't know. She was fairly young, so whatever she had, she kicked it for a while.
Well, I don't know if you noticed or not, but while they were showing that scene, I mean, she's coughing up blood, and that's usually it's never a good thing, but it can be a really bad thing. And her mom looked really ill. She was sweaty and, you know, didn't look good. But did you notice that you could hear, like, voices all around them? Remember, they've talked about before that she grew up with her mom in, like, a house or an apartment or whatever with a bunch of other families. They were all stuck in there together. And I know that that's how TB
spreads.
Is, right. It's in close living quarters. Hmm. You end up with that kind of problem a lot more often. And so they were showing us even that. They even took the time to, you could hear voices of like people talking from the next room over. And Elizabeth's just sitting there like wiping the blood off her mom's mouth and rinsing out the blood. And she's thinking about having to go live with cousins.
Yeah, her mom's telling her to go live with a cousin in case something happens. And the key or the directions or whatever in a drawer beside
right.
Grandma's brooch. And she says, "You're not going to die."
Right, right.
Trying to reassure her. The other parallel there was the relationship, the importance of their relationship, a mother and a daughter.
Sure.
And that just, I think you're right. I think Elizabeth had her Philip dream flashback moment.
Right.
And she woke up and she realized right then and there when she was staring on the bed, you know, my daughter is the most important thing here.
Right, and I don't want her to go through.
Everything juggled right there.
Right, losing her mother, I agree. Well, then we go to Nina. She is looking at the empty bunk where that girl was that she had essentially ratted out. But she's got dirty shoes on. For some reason, I don't know why this struck me so hard on this episode, except that I always remember her in clean shoes before. They get those little white, like, slip-on tennis shoes.
Well, they may have given them to her dirty.
I remember, I could be wrong, and I'd have to go back and look. But
you mean
I remember,
clean white tennis shoes in prison before?
Yes, I remember her slipping on clean white tennis shoes all
the
time.
Maybe they made her go out in the dirt and work a little bit.
And this time, her shoes are dirty. And she's putting on dirty shoes, and something about that just struck me as wrong. I know that's such a minor detail.
You're gonna talk to Bianca Davies. She was the whoever the set director was. You got to talk to the set director.
No, I think there was a reason for it.
Oh.
I don't think it was an accident.
Maybe she's digging a tunnel like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption.
I don't think she was.
Okay.
But she's running her fingers along those scratches in the wall. She turns over up against the wall. And that's that whole scene. They show the dirty shoes with no laces in the cell block, her looking at the empty bed, and then she turns over and starts running her fingers along the cracks in the wall. And that was it. Okay, then we go to Oleg's father talking to Oleg about how Nina made things harder on herself. He's found out something about Nina, that she was given a chance to go get some information from somebody, and she ended up somehow sabotaging.
Yeah, she damaged, did something to
with the
damage
project,
but she really didn't. Remember, the project was a success. The wing he designed was a success. When he designed, because they're taking pictures of the stealth bomber, in case you don't know, and they're giving them to him, and he's trying to recreate this stealth technology was a new thing then.
Right.
We didn't even know about it. The general public didn't know about it. So getting pictures and forwarding them to him for him to, as an engineer, recreate this wing from the stealth bomber off of pictures is what he was working about. If you'll remember a few episodes back, he said, or she said, that the project was a success. They were able to...
Was mostly a
success. And so she didn't really damage the project, but this is the story that either Oleg's dad's telling Oleg, or they told Oleg's dad. But Oleg's dad is just kind of playing with Oleg here a little bit, and you can
tell... Do you think that's what it was? Or, see, I don't know.
He's wanting to see how committed Oleg is to this woman, how invested Oleg is with this woman. And he mentions to her that, he wants to see her. Oleg wants to see her. And Oleg wants his dad to help. And his dad reminds Oleg, I can do stuff, but, you can't do that if you align yourself with a traitor.
That's what it'll be seen as.
It's
going to
be
seen her.
It's going to be seen as that.
Right, and he can't help him. Nobody can help him.
No, yeah, because you won't be able to pull back from that. So he's trying to caution him against it. And I think Oleg's dad wants to see just how much Oleg really, really wants to see this girl. So he asks him, "Will you come home if I can help her?"
Right, because I don't think we pointed out earlier, but Oleg's dad wants him to come home.
He ordered the station chief to send him home.
Yeah, but now since his brother's gone, his mother is, like you said, very depressed.
She's traumatized.
She wants her other son close by, and he does too, he says. So his dad's trying to get him home. He's trying to get his child home. And because, what he's doing... I don't know, is it dangerous over there?
Oleg?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a spy. He's in charge of science and technology.
Yeah. Well, he's, other than just whatever he's doing in the embassy, he's also doing, covert stuff with Stan and stuff that could certainly get him in trouble. And his dad just wants him to come home.
Sure, he wants to cut his tour short and he wants to come home. I don't think Oleg has any interest in coming home, not just when the mission's over. I think Oleg's kind of in love with America is what I think.
There's something. He's certainly eager to go back, but his dad says, "If I'm able to help Nina, will you come home?" Is it worth it to you?
Right.
Essentially. And
right.
He says it is.
Yep. And so that's all he needs to know. So I think maybe Dad might have had a little something to do.
I do too. I was going to ask you, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, he's going
to
end this.
So it's a little bit later on, and William checks on Elizabeth. Her fever's broken.
Yeah, she looks rough.
But he doesn't know if that's a better sign or not.
I know. William's doing the best he can. He's starting to get frustrated with his own situation there, with his own inability to be able to give better information and manage this thing better.
Well, I mean, that's a wait and see. It really is.
It is, and he knows it is, but he's still, the frustrations, the wear and tear is there on him. I think it's wearing on him. Don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, I do. But who would know? Because he acts so flustered with every situation, kind of anyway. But yeah, I think it definitely...
He seems a little frustrated.
Definitely would. But then he has that conversation with Philip.
Yep, they have a moment, and he tells Philip how lucky he is. You know, he asks how long they've been together and how many kids they have. And then he just looks at him, and he considers it for a minute, and he says, you know, you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You're lucky to have that.
Right, and William says he's had nobody to talk to about stuff except handlers who just don't care, but Philip kind of goes into the whole Paige story and how, you know, everything's been falling apart with Paige and Elizabeth wanted to tell her and all that kind of stuff, but he didn't, and they fought for months, but they did tell her, but it backfired, essentially, and William says no sane person would do this work, and Philip said, well, Elizabeth would. And he said that he...
Just start talking about the job.
...would be normal. Did you get that part?
Yeah.
But he would still want to be with Elizabeth.
Right.
So everything that we've just heard... I mean, remember, Elizabeth just vocalizes, this is what you always wanted anyway. You know, just to be...
Just to be an American.
Right, just to be here and
be,
live
an American
here.
Life.
And he just kind of said it, right?
I know, he confessed it to another agent.
He kind of did, didn't he?
He did.
I thought that was, you know, but with Elizabeth.
Philip's getting a little short on tolerance for ridiculousness. I mean, this is a pretty grave, dire situation. And they're having this conversation, they're having an honest conversation between two guys who are in the same boat, essentially. And Philip just tells him the truth. This thing with Est has gotten Philip into... getting in touch with his feminine side.
Maybe.
And now he's in touch. He's going to get William in touch with his biological feminine side.
Well, then we go to commercial, and it must have been a really long commercial, because when we come back, and Gabriel's sitting up drinking water.
Yeah, Gabriel, yeah, da da da.
Yeah, everything's, you know, he
looks better. Elizabeth's feeling better.
Yep, she's getting up. They hug. And it's determined that Elizabeth never had the disease, that she was just having a reaction to the drug.
Right.
And, you know, it was pointed out earlier that the drug, because Philip said, well, why aren't you and I sick if it's the drug? And he said, well, the drug can react differently to different people.
Photophobia, sensitivity to light. That's what Gabriel has.
Yes, that's what he has.
Then, I mean, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead. Now, Elizabeth tells Philip, can't kill.
Right.
Pastor Tim.
Because
she wants to abort that mission.
She knows she's going to be here. She knows she's not dying. And she's had all this time to think about nothing else.
But the importance
and
of
she
her
don't
relationship
want to hurt Paige.
With
right.
Paige. How truly important her relationship is with Paige.
And Philip is like excited for a moment. Did you get that?
He said, let's
so
run.
You want to run?
Let's
you
get out of here. Let's go.
I know.
I'm ready
but
to go.
But that wasn't what she had in mind at all. She wants to work them. Now, I don't know what that's going to entail, but this could be a really good story.
How about the interaction they had with Gabriel just a few
moments
right later?
Yeah, right then.
When they're right there with Gabriel, and they're saying, nope, we're going to work them. Because Gabriel says, okay, I'll get you out as fast as I can.
That's right.
He says, no, we're going to work them. And then Gabriel, instead of being Gabriel Handler, this is the way it's going to be, considers what they're saying, and I think it's because Gabriel now knows... He owes, these people stayed with him. They stayed in the same room with him.
Oh, yeah.
With this disease that there's no coming back from. They took this chance and this risk, and they saved this man's life.
Right.
I think they're going to get a lot of points from Gabriel, not just here, but later on.
But what about that story, that warning that Gabriel gave them? man, that was a deep warning. Did you hear it? He was like, when he was young, he was afraid all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is pre-war.
Right.
When the Soviet Union was still going through their...
He said they were killing each other every day, and he told himself that he would be safe if he just did what he was told, but none of them were safe, even though they were doing what they were told. And every day he'd wonder, was this the day?
Is this the day?
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Right. And he says it is not an easy way to live. I mean, and that's just all he says about it. He doesn't say, so you don't want to do this. He doesn't do any of that. He just kind of, you know, he's like, this is your choice. But man, that was a good story. You know, it's like...
Yeah, it was.
Like waiting, you know, you're just... It's like a constant wait. But he says he'll get the center to see. And they might see it their way if it means that they still have a chance at Paige.
William's gone from cleaning up behind everybody and picking up cigarette butts to saying, okay, look, don't ever come back to this apartment and pay the rent and don't let anybody else live in it.
Again, we're hearing about the seriousness. And he's like, yeah, we might have gotten it all with the bleach.
And then William.
But I need some tea.
William volunteers to stay behind with Gabriel and take care of him. I think William's grown a little bit in this situation.
Yeah, it's amazing what a little spit in the face will do for you.
Everybody's reflecting a little bit. Everybody's having their own little reflective moment. You know, Philip had his early on, and he's, you know, where he is. And then we see Elizabeth. She just had that dream, and she's had her realization moment. And now Gabriel is getting reflective,
right,
sitting there on the couch. And even William is reflecting back on his, you know, solo life.
Well, being alone now and how difficult
right.
the path that
and,
is.
And how he envies Elizabeth and Philip. And Elizabeth here clearly is thinking more and more about family. Gabriel agrees to try to persuade the sinner to leave Tim and Alice alive. And in order to do that, he wants to put the spin on it that, look, if we do something to Tim and Alice, it may affect our being able to recruit
right.
Paige later. And, of course,
they don't
want to hear that at all. But Gabriel says, look, I got to give them something.
Right.
You know, I got to spin this some way. So this is the best way to do it. And I think he's right.
But then we see Elizabeth and Philip come home.
They go home and they go bowling.
Yep, they do. Paige is like
the most low-rent American activity, and Elizabeth is just loving it because now she's, I guess...
Well, Paige is upset. Did you notice? We got to talk
American.
About this, though. We got before the bowling, they come in, and Paige is like, you can't do this to me anymore. You have to let me know. So, essentially, Paige is now asking them. There's two things in this. This is one of them.
To be let in on what's going on.
Tell me, because she was so upset and so worried and everything.
Wouldn't tell Henry's, kid anything.
Henry's just mad that he didn't get to go to Epcot, and he didn't really care about anything else.
Yeah, Henry's
but,
just
yeah.
kind of aloof, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's the 12-year-old, I guess, little boy, but...
He's probably the master Russian
speaker. But then they go bowling, like you said, and Paige is kind of teasing her mom now. So this has went from being, oh my gosh, this is my life is over...
No, they're joking about it now.
...to joking. She's like,
what
so
does Elizabeth
did they
do?
Teach you that? Yeah, she plays right along with
Essential
it.
Essential part of Russian training.
I know, just with a fake Russian...
With an
American fake
With a stereotypical
right.
American, Americanized stereotypical Russian, Borison, what's that chick on Bullwinkle?
How old are you?
Okay, let's move along.
Good grief. But they laugh.
Vital.
They laugh.
Vital part of Russian training is what... Vital part of training is what
they
she says.
They laugh together, though they pause.
I've never seen Elizabeth do a belly laugh, have you?
And Paige, I was going to say this whole, until I saw this, the whole episode, you know how our daughters are always threatening to like magic marker us with like the stern eyebrows, like the looking down and everything, you know, if we
mm-hmm.
go along and don't laugh or smile enough. I couldn't think about anything else except Paige because you'll see her with, like, the eyebrows furrowed in the whole... I mean, ever since this season started, we have not seen a picture of Paige, not one scene of her that I can recall that did not have the furrowed eyebrows or the raised eyebrows or something. So I was really waiting on that. And that now she laughed. She laughed about what's going on. huge moment, I think.
Yeah. Well, for Elizabeth, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because Elizabeth is now joking about it.
Okay, now this was cruel. This was cruel. We love you, Rodgers. We really do. We think you're brilliant. What you did to us...
Oh, man.
...was cruel.
Oh, God. I thought it was real there for a minute.
I thought it was real.
I thought she was getting great news. I mean, it appeared real, and then her and Anton were now going to be released.
I know, it wasn't
everybody
just her.
Everybody's giving her smiles. The Russian attorney who's sitting across from her is giving her smiles. The
staff. And it looks like the first time he's maybe ever smiled in his life.
The staff members of the Russian laboratory/research center are giving her, you know, nods, and she's walking
and she
by him.
She goes to him, and he gets all choked up.
They hug each other. She shows him the plane tickets. They're flying out of there, and then the garage door opens, and they walk out into the snow and the sunshine, and that's when I thought, oh, no.
I know. I did, too. I was waiting on, like, a sniper to be on the roof or something.
No, I knew then we were in, like, Tommy Chong dreamland there. I knew that was over.
How'd you know?
Well, they were dreaming. They were walking out into, you know, the vast, you know, white, snow white.
Oh my gosh, but I thought she, you know, she was like just overcome with relief at everything, and she had, you know, on like these clothes, and she was so pretty.
My notes, I wrote, it looks just like a dream, and then of course they show that it is, and I had to write, and it was. And then bam, right back to harsh reality.
I wrote no. Big letters, exclamation point. It was all a dream. It was like a punch in my gut. I hated that.
I wrote myself a question. Anton is going to? ? Wow. Looked like a dream. - It was.
Oh, that's so bad.
I know. They totally fooled me.
And she's in her cell, and they're coming
well,
in
I wanted,
to get did, her.
Didn't you want to believe it?
Yes.
I wanted to believe it.
I
was like Mulder. I wanted to believe.
I know, right? I want, not only did I want Nina to be okay, but I also wanted, I want Anton to go home to his son. I mean, that's what I want. And they gave us this, you know.
They handed it to us and they snatched
they
it back.
Did.
They hit us in the face with a cold bucket of Russian, Siberian water.
And...
cell door opens.
She's being transferred, they tell her. And they put all of her belongings into like a little grocery bag. A little wadded up grocery bag. And she puts on those dirty shoes again.
Nita goes down the hall and the sentence is read. And she is immediately executed.
I mean, she doesn't even have time to ingest the, you
gun
know, I mean,
shot
she,
to the back of the head.
Yeah.
Says you're going to be, the sentence will be carried out shortly. And it was like less than 2 seconds later, she was shot in the back of
the head. Her appeal had been denied.
Yep, that was...
She collapsed for a second. They were holding her up and started to hyperventilate. And, I mean, like you said, within, you know, 2 seconds. And they, I mean...
And, shot her in the back of the head.
Yeah, and they check a pulse, declare her dead. There's a huge pool of blood. I mean, she was shot in the head.
Did you see how realistic the shot in the head was as well? Let me point this out to you. If you watch it again, you'll watch the Russian, you know, I like to call him Ivan. Ivan's behind her. He's the third Russian guard.
Okay.
And he steps to the side to shoot her from the side. You know why he did that? So that he wouldn't accidentally shoot the guy standing at the desk who was straight ahead in front of her. Because the guy who was straight ahead in front of her, who was reading the declaration or the decision of the Supreme... Soviet court or whatever it was, that bullet would have gone through her head possibly and hit him. So he steps to the side so as to get her from the side. This is how detail oriented this set is, and these production people, you guys are just absolutely amazing. Every little detail here is just, I mean, I wouldn't be able to watch your blooper reel because it doesn't exist, I'm sure. I mean, you guys are fantastic. This is so well done, and every little detail is considered. I mean, I think it's fantastic.
But did you think that, all I could think when I was watching this is, they do this all the time, there, right in that floor. I don't think she was special.
Oh, I think Nita was really special.
I don't think it was done special for her.
No,
but they had the tarps ready to come in and get her body out immediately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, did you see the guys, matter-of-factly, filling out the administrative...
And he's doing paperwork beside the big blood spot in the floor.
As soon as the execution was complete, they got to get the paperwork done and
this was
continue.
Not a... Yeah.
It's real antiseptic, real matter-of-fact, just totally... No feeling.
I wonder how you would get used to something like that. Like being the person who stands there and does that kind of thing. I mean, how do you go home and eat your, you know, whatever you eat for dinner?
You drink lots of vodka.
That was really rough.
My Ukrainian friend down the street who sells tires calls it vodka. We've got one more little detail that we missed. Remember when they were bowling?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who's the first bowler up?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth is the first bowler up. Did you happen to catch that song that was playing?
I didn't. I didn't pay any attention. I was still
mourning. Well, lucky for you, I'm here.
Okay.
Once again.
Well, good.
That song that was playing, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this girl's name correctly. It was by Lenny Lovitch. It was called Lucky Number. And Lucky Number by Lena Lovitch was released in 1979. And guess when Lena's birthday is?
When?
You guess.
March 30th.
Why would you guess March 30th?
Well, that's because it's
your birthday. But
so
Lena's,
all the great people were born.
Lena's got a few years on me. She was born in 1949. She's an American of Serbian descent. And this song, Lucky Number, reached number 3 on the UK chart. It was a 1979 hit. I think I mentioned that. And in 1978, she came out with another song. It was a cover song that was done by, I think, the Shondells originally. And it's called I Think I'm Alone Now. Remember in 87
mm-hmm.
when Tiffany had her big hit with it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lena Lovitch on the single, this was on the A side. And Lucky Number was on the B side of the single. But Lucky Number did so much better that it became a hit. Now, that's just some Lena Lovitch trivia for you there. But the lyrics to this song are what are interesting after this whole episode. I never used to cry because I was all alone. For me, myself, and I is all I've ever known. I never felt the need to have a hand to hold. In everything I do, I take complete control. That's where I'm coming from. My lucky number's 1. I've everything I need to keep me satisfied. There's nothing you can do to make me change my mind. I'm having so much fun. My lucky number's 1. And then it goes on, and it ends up with, you certainly do have a strange effect on me. I never thought I could feel the way I feel. There's something in your eyes that gives me a wild idea. I never want to be apart from you, my dear. I guess it must be true. My lucky number's 2. So this realization that Elizabeth is she's so isolated, she's such an island, she has to be such an island to be an effective spy and complete the mission, that's gone now.
I think it is, and I think that's great, yeah. I didn't even hear any of that.
And it ends with, this rearrangement suits me now. I must confess, the number 1 was dull, and 2 is best. I want to stay with you. I feel like I'm reading a Dr. Seuss book. I want to stay with you. My lucky number's 2. This is a perfect song, dug out by I don't know who.
One of the brilliant people.
How they found this obscure 70s hit. And remember, everything doesn't have to be about the 80s because, you know, the Soviet situation with America, you know, started in right after the end of World War II when they put up the Berlin Wall.
Well, and also in the 80s, the early 80s, you're going to still be hearing late 70s.
You're going to be hearing,
music.
Yeah.
So but, that wasn't
so they're playing this hit, this 4-year-old hit.
Maybe particularly in a bowling alley.
In a bowling alley, and Elizabeth's up to bowl, and they're talking about this way she was, and now she's different. And I just thought that was perfect.
She's not. It's not just all about her anymore.
But this is a testament to their ability to put everything substantive in this in this.
That's great.
In this show.
And a testament to my podcast partner.
Let's not make it about me. Let's make it about these set people. How good must you be to come up with this obscure song and place it right where it needs to go and make it totally, totally, totally relevant to Elizabeth in that moment?
It's crazy. I mean, this episode and really just almost the second half of this, I mean, they pinpointed it that closely. I agree.
I thought that was just brilliant. I think they're brilliant.
They are brilliant.
And I can't wait to I know that they're going to have to end this eventually because I know the Berlin Wall came down at some point, I think 89. But I hope they can keep this show going.
Well, yeah, but so far we're only like 4 days into this, right?
What kind of team of people must they have working this? Whatever they do, there needs to be some way to follow this particular group, and they certainly should keep these people together and watch some of their other stuff.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. I already follow a lot of them on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about next week. What's coming up?
You can't tell.
No, you really can't.
You can't tell anything, because if you watched last week's upcoming scenes, they didn't have a damn thing to do with anything in any particular order of this episode.
Well, no. I mean, you can't do it justice in 30 seconds, but we do see Philip and Elizabeth working on Pastor Tim, it looks like. We see Adderholt telling Stan that Martha says she's having an affair with a married guy, so Adderholt's not keeping that to himself. Martha tells Clark that she can't live like this, and she's crying. Philip tells Gabriel that Martha says the FBI knows, presumably about her. We don't know, but Gabriel says she may not be blown.
Nothing they're showing us has got anything to do with anything we think we got figured out.
Well, so, Philip's on the phone telling somebody he loves them.
That could be anybody. It could be Paige. It could be... I mean, he could have made up with Stan. He may be having an affair with Sandra. Who knows? Who knows who that is?
You think?
He may have got a bromance going with William. We don't know.
Okay. They really do make it difficult.
I refuse to participate. They fooled me with Nina. They'll not fool me again.
Okay. How do you feel about Nina being gone? Do you care?
Hot. What?
Do you care that she's gone?
Well, I'll miss her. I'll miss her character, yeah.
It was sad. But I do think that they had played her part so much. You know, she was like, she got caught doing something, so she was turned. And then she was turned, so she got caught being turned, so she was turned. You know, they used that against her. And then she was sent somewhere else to try to work that off, and she was turned. And I don't know. I think they kind of played it a lot.
She was definitely used and abused. And in the end, it was just tragic, because she got the information they needed from Anton. She got the information they needed from the girl, and then she for all of her efforts, she got shot in the head.
We hope you'll connect with us here at Tribal Rant and become part of the American Reds podcast. So Mike, I'm sure people are going to want to talk about this brilliant episode on Twitter. So how might people get a hold of you?
At Mike from TN, but please don't mention my mispronunciation of Adderholt's name. Thank you.
And I'm at Michelle from TN. Also, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/tribalrant. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn, so you can subscribe to us there. Please like us and rate us if you like what we're doing. And, of course, all this information is on tribalrant.com, where you can email us or leave us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Don't forget, we just finished up our Walking Dead podcast here on Tribal Rant, and we just, like this week, struggled through the season ending of this dark, dark episode. It's called, our podcast of it's called The Walking OG, so check that out if you like Walking Dead.
If you like torture, check that episode out.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
We may be starting back on Fear the Walking Dead podcast. It comes on this Sunday, and we're going to watch the episode one of it, and podcast at least that one episode, and... if we can find a reason, we'll continue the podcast. It's here on TribalRant.com, and it's called Fear the Walking Prequel. Also, we have a Survivor podcast that we do every week, so if you guys like Survivor, check that out. It's The Tribe Has Spoken. And if you can't get enough of the Americans, we can't blame you. Our friends Mike and Jamie over at West Coast Project do the Americans podcast that's really good. So if you still want more Americans and want to hear a different view, check them out at westcoastproject.com. they'll probably have theirs out. Roughly, they try to get out, I think, about the same time that you and I do. So they will hopefully get theirs out tonight, too. So
great.
Do we have anything else, or are we done? Okay.
I'm done.
Then next week, we'll be back for episode 5.
I'm excited.
Me
it's
too.
Fantastic television
really
show.
Good.
They're doing a fantastic job. I'll watch anything these people put out.
Yep. Okay. See you then.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.